Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we take history's greatest disasters and tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today, we'll be discussing the Chernobyl nuclear meltdown. Let's get started. The Chernobyl power plant was a nuclear power plant in the former USSR, located in northern Ukraine. It was responsible for 10% of Ukraine's electricity at the time of the disaster. On the early morning of April 1986, an explosion at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant's reactor number 4 caused the worst nuclear disaster in history. The explosion and subsequent fire resulted in large quantities of radioactive iodine and cesium being released into the air. The toxic cloud reached neighboring Belarus and parts of Russia and Europe. The nearby town of Pripyat, built to house workers at Chernobyl, went from a population of almost 50,000 people before the accident to zero, making it an atomic ghost town. On the morning of the accident, the reactor operating staff were ironically conducting a safety test. Things went wrong when, according to Reuters, facility operators, in violation of safety regulations, had switched off important control systems and allowed the reactor to reach unstable, low-power conditions. At 1:23 a.m., a power surge led to a series of blasts, which blew off the reactor's heavy steel and concrete lid. Chernobyl is one of only 2 nuclear energy disasters rated at 7, the maximum severity on the International Nuclear Event Scale, the other being the 2011 Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster in Japan. In all, 50 million curies of radiation were released into the atmosphere, the equivalent of 500 Hiroshima bombs. Fun facts, aka death stats. The number of direct and indirect deaths related to Chernobyl vary. Approximately 30 men died from immediate blast trauma and acute radiation syndrome, ARS, in the seconds to months after the disaster. According to Reuters.com, while the Chernobyl Forum, a group of eight UN agencies, said some 4,000 people will die as a result of radiation exposure, the Chernobyl Union of Ukraine, a non-government body, estimates the present death toll from the disaster at almost 734,000. Death by radiation poisoning is slow and painful, shown with gruesome accuracy in HBO's 2019 miniseries, Chernobyl.
What will happen to our boys?
The divers.
The divers, the firefighters, the men in the control room. What does the radiation do to them, precisely?
Oh, the level, some of them were exposed. Ionizing radiation tears the cellular structure apart. The skin blisters, turns red, then black. This is followed by a latency period. The immediate effects subside. The patient appears to be recovering, healthy even, but they aren't. This usually only lasts for a day or two. Then the cellular damage begins to manifest. The bone marrow dies. The immune system fails. The organs and soft tissue begin to decompose. The arteries and veins spill open like sieves, to the point where you can't even administer morphine for the pain, which is unimaginable. Within 3 days to 3 weeks, you're dead.
Well, today we have a very special guest with us, Sir Paul F. Tompkins.
That's right.
He asked me to call him Sir.
Rebecca!
What?
Why would you tell people that?
Why?
That
oh, no.
Off my conversation.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. That was spontaneous. But, Paul, we thought you'd be a perfect guest because tell us about a disastrous tweet you had regarding Chernobyl.
You know, like most people, uh-huh. I watched all of the Chernobyl miniseries on HBO. It was so fascinating. I wasn't as into it as everyone else was. My wife was absolutely 100% invested in this.
Yeah.
And I watched it. I thought it was good, but I feel like I didn't catch Chernobyl fever the way a lot of people did. But people really went crazy for this thing.
Yes.
Like, they loved it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, in the middle of this thing, I tweeted out because it popped into my head and I couldn't get out of my head. Singing to the tune of Shapoopy from The Music Man.
Oh, no.
I tweeted out with like little musical notes. Chernobyl, the whole thing's melting down. Chernobyl, your face meets on the ground. And I just, you know, gallows humor. And then I got some pushback on it. And usually when that happens, I'm like, whatever, who cares? It's a joke, blah, blah, blah. But people were like, hey, there's actually people still alive that lived through that.
Paul.
and I was like, you know what? Okay.
The face meme is such a
That might have gone too far. That might have gone too far.
So
I felt terrible about that.
Well, it's a good warning for, because we were recording a podcast and I'm assuming the same number of people are still alive since that tweet, or maybe not.
How many months ago was this miniseries?
But we should, this was a horrible disaster. And while we do talk in jest,
we make light of the situation.
Yes.
Number one, we're trying to find somebody to blame. Let's be
true.
But
there's a good amount of whistling past the graveyard that we do.
That's right. That's
if
a perfect
I
way
may.
Of putting it.
Thank
I
you.
Mean, sometimes it's necessary to talk about the hard stuff.
Absolutely.
And this is some hard stuff.
This is, it don't get much harder than Trudeau. We'll be right back.
Also with us today are producer Amanda.
Hi, everyone.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hello.
Well, let's get started figuring out who's to blame for mm-hmm. this terrible disaster. I mean, the safety of the world is pretty much on our shoulders.
Yes.
And I feel like we're up to the task. Am I right?
I think so, yeah.
I think between the four of us, we got this one covered, guys.
As long as Paul doesn't tweet anything.
Yes.
While we're recording.
Turn your phone off.
I said I was sorry.
So let's start with a step-by-step account of what happened. According to unseer.org, this is the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation. So legit.
As opposed to most of our other facts.
The accident at the Chernobyl reactor happened during an experimental test of the electrical control system as the reactor was being shut down for routine maintenance. The operators, in violation of safety regulations, had switched off important control systems and allowed the reactor, which had design flaws, to reach unstable, low power conditions. A sudden power surge caused a steam explosion that lifted the 1,000 metric ton cover off of the top of the reactor and ruptured the pressure tubes, causing a second explosion that exposed the reactor core to the environment. Subsequently, an intense graphite fire burned for 10 days.
Oh, the graphite.
Mm-hmm. Under
oh,
the
boy.
Graphite
oh,
yeah. plays
big,
a big...
big bad monster was the graphite. Under those conditions, large releases of radioactive materials took place. The Chernobyl plant did not have the fortified containment structure common to most nuclear power plants elsewhere in the world. Within this protection, radioactive material escaped into the environment. So they were not prepared.
The idea that when you're talking about nuclear power, that you would ever be like, I know it's against regulations, but let's just shut those two off and get this done faster. Well, like, why?
That's a great question. So they have to do this test. Now, this test has been put off for about 2 years.
Another great idea.
Something I was reading was this weekend. So it happens on a Saturday morning / Friday night, which is like the worst, right? Because everyone's wasted. I'm partying. Assuming everyone's
yeah,
partying.
The Soviet Union. Yeah. No, but honestly, yeah.
But like, yeah. It's 1986. There's so much vodka. They've had so much vodka at this point. Mm. And so the actual test was supposed to happen on Friday day. But there was it was a holiday weekend. I believe it was May Day was the holiday. Mm-hmm. I don't know what May Day is.
May Day is the anniversary of the Russian Revolution, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yes. So a big one. It's like their 4th of July.
Exactly.
Yeah. They didn't want it to happen they didn't want the possibility of power cuts like during the day. So they are like, you have to do it after 9 o'clock that night. What happens is that it keeps getting pushed back, and then all of a sudden, the 12 p.m. shift starts.
Mm-hmm. 12 a.m., you mean?
I'm sorry. Yeah, yes. 12 a.m.
Yeah.
I'm assuming these are 8-hour shifts. Who knows?
Right.
You know, you got your 12 to 8, your 8 to, God, I'm terrible at math, 8 to 6, mm-hmm. and then your 6 to 12, right? Mm-hmm. You got your bottom of the barrel people coming in. And not just
people who are willing to work in the middle of the night.
Well, I mean, it's communist Russia, so like you don't really have a choice.
True, yeah, because it's the tail end. Gorbachev is in power now.
Is in power.
And so it's the tail end of
the
Cold War and the sort of like the Russian projection of everything we do is bigger and better and, you know, we are matchless in this, that, and the other thing.
Yes. 12 a.m. shift comes in. And in this shift, the guy who's like running the, what do you say?
Operation.
The guy in charge. Yeah, the operation. He's not the head
big
of
burrito.
He's not the biggest burrito.
Like the supervisor, essentially?
Yes.
He's like the crew chief or whatever.
Exactly.
Four more.
His name is
Shift Captain.
He has a great name. No, of course. He has a legit name, which is Deputy Chief Engineer for Operations at the Energy Station, Chernobyl. And his name is Anatoly Dyatlov. You might remember him from the series. He's played by Paul Ritter in the series.
Oh, I remember this guy.
Okay. So you remember his, you know, he's got the mustache. He's wearing the little...
He's got the bushy mustache. He's got the little white soda jerk hat.
Yes,
doing a lot
exactly.
of yelling.
In what?
Loves to yell.
He loved yelling.
This guy...
He loved yelling.
He hasn't slept for 2 days. And in comes this new
cranky
shift. So he's very cranky.
Why hasn't he slept for 2 days? Because of parties?
No, he's been working. He's actually been working. They're trying to get this test up and running.
Right.
He's like pretty much in charge of this test. I'm almost sure that the guy who runs the whole Chernobyl station, Viktor Brukhanov, is sleeping, and he doesn't even know that this safety test is happening at the moment. I think we should just go ahead and right off the bat put
the guy in charge at the time.
Dyatlov.
Yeah.
You know, at the time. He's the one who decided not to sleep.
He's the first guy.
I have a picture of him here that I've pulled up. And so this is the real man side by side with the actor who portrayed him in Chernobyl. And he was portrayed in a not flattering light in Chernobyl, the TV series.
He looks even worse in real life.
I was thinking the same thing. He looks like more of a dick.
He wasn't the softest of them. In real life,
at the end, we will decide who was the softest person involved.
Yes, that is, yeah.
That'll be another conclusion.
So this guy, Dyatlov, he's responsible for overseeing the long overdue safety test on reactor number 4. By the time it finally began in the early hours of April 26, he's sleep deprived, ill-tempered as ever. And when the young reactor engineer, who we'll talk about next, makes a mistake soon after taking over the controls on the midnight shift.
Can't wait to talk about that guy.
Dyatlov insists on continuing with the test, even though Toptanov, who we'll talk about later, and safety protocol suggested that he stop. They suggested that they abort mission.
Safety protocol plus his junior, who's the guy sort of in the trenches doing the testing, reports to our guy Dyatlov, hey, we should stop.
Yes.
And overall, this is a safety test.
It's a safety test. We don't need to do it.
No! We don't need to do it.
They're doing it in the case that the Americans bomb them, right? And they lose electricity. They want to make sure their nuclear... They want to make sure what happened doesn't happen.
Yeah.
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 There's a great book I rented at the library. It's called Midnight in Chernobyl by Adam
Sounds romantic.
Higginbotham. Great name, right? Higginbotham?
Adam Higginbotham.
So Higginbotham,
Midnight in Chernobyl.
He writes 400 pages. No, he's wrote a 500-page book, so the guy's smart. I got to page I got to the 90s.
You made it through the 90s?
I made it through the 90s, yeah.
She took it out at like 4 p.m. last night.
Yes, yeah.
You're almost a fifth of the way through it.
So in this huge book, Mr. Adams says that they needed to descend the power to 720 megawatts. That's what's, you know.
Also would have been my recommendation.
So, but Dyatlov, probably assuming that a lower power level was safer, was adamant that it be conducted at a level of 200 megawatts. Now, Akimov, who is the person underneath Dyatlov, he has a copy of the test protocol in his hand and is vehemently telling him that this is a mistake. Now, at 200 megawatts, Akimov knew that the reactor could be dangerously unstable and even harder to manage than usual. And the program for the test stipulated to be conducted at no less than 700 megawatts. But Dyatlov insisted he knew better. And Akimov just said, all right, bro, this is your ship. So I guess we're going with you.
Dyatlov had a lot of opportunities to...
So many.
Stop what he was doing.
He's a proud man.
He's a proud, sleepy, cranky man.
Yes. Yeah. Akimov is not going up on the board. He's more of a hero, which we're not in the business of heroes here.
Uh-uh.
So forget I even said his name. But we should talk about the younger guy. So there's Dyatlov, there's Akimov, and then there's Leonid?
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 Mm-hmm.
Toptanov.
Toptanov, yep.
So Mr. Toptanov here was the senior reactor control engineer, and he had been a senior reactor operator for just 2 months. He's 25 years old, and he had never before piloted the reactor through the difficult shutdown process.
Wow.
He was... This is the guy. This is our man.
25.
I know. A baby. Mm.
So this is him from the show. I think you'll remember him. And then in real life. So he was a very sympathetic character in the show. Not that that's coloring our decisions on The Alarmist.
No. Good acting doesn't get you out of it. He was unaware of the numerous design faults that made accidents likely during the normal course of operation. Newbie. Toptanov skipped a step in the process of assuming control of the reactor, accidentally allowing its power output to fall almost to nothing. He pressed the shutdown button of the emergency safety system, and the system vulnerable to most series of the reactor's design faults inadvertently precipitating its destruction. It was his push of the button that caused the explosion. I mean, we could all argue that it wasn't just his push of the button.
No, but you got to put him on the board.
But Babyface has got to go up.
Sorry, Babyface.
Toptanov is on the board.
We also need to talk about the head of the Chernobyl plant.
I think so.
Victor Brokhanov. Played by Con O'Neill. He's got a great face.
I've seen him in so many British things. He's got a crazy, scratchy voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's the director of the Chernobyl energy station. This is his big, what do you call it? Slap. What do you call it?
The mark against him?
The mark slap. Against him. Yeah, his big slap. Big slap.
The big slap. That could be a new thing. We send someone to jail and someone gets a big slap.
Absolutely. The person who's second most responsible. Oh, Jesus.
So, well, his big slap was that he helped cover up a serious plant accident in 1982, 4 years earlier. And he signed off on the launch of the station's newest and most advanced reactor, Unit 4. And even though a key required safety test hadn't been carried out, when the test was rescheduled to take place during a regular maintenance shutdown of the reactor on April 25th, 1986. So this is the guy who kept putting it off. Brokhanov's deputy, a party loyalist who had learned that what little he knew of nuclear physics from a correspondence course, didn't even bother to tell his boss it was happening. I mean, this guy, he's the head honcho.
Yeah.
He is making all the decisions.
And he also later, he kind of covered it up. I mean, as was sort of portrayed in the miniseries, like he really tried to cover up and not report. You know, he didn't want everyone to know how bad of a job he did.
Right.
And well, so he didn't report it to hires up.
Embarrassed.
And so the sort of evacuation was delayed and all the sort of like safety protocols were delayed because of his sort of shame.
Yeah. About it. And not just his personal shame, but because you were not the mentality of the Soviet Union at that time that was still in play was Russia does not have disasters. We don't have mistakes. We have, you know, we built a wonderful society under communism and, you know, we don't have like the same problems that the West has because we have figured it out. So they and obviously this figures into Chernobyl as well.
Yeah.
Now, I just have to say, Paul seems to have hit on something because he's like his tweet, he's hit a nerve with me. No, but I think we can't ignore that this might have been a strictly Soviet Union disaster that I don't know that this would have happened in the same extreme if it had been an American nuclear power plant because of the lies, the secrecy, the suppression of information. So, I mean, are we putting the Soviet Union on the board or communism?
I mean, I think we have to.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of it. And they were definitely putting themselves over the welfare of these citizens.
Yes.
They didn't want to cause an alarm, which is like, as we know in this podcast, that's the number one thing you don't do. Always cause an alarm, right? Right. And they also, again, it was their pride as well, because had they said anything about the reactor having exploded, then all of a sudden the world was going to look down on them.
I think also their nuclear power was a point of pride in the Soviet Union at the time, you know, starting back in the atomic age and with the Cold War and everything.
And this is after Three Mile Island happened in the United States.
Right, right.
I don't know about what Three is Mile that? Island. I was looking at Amanda like, maybe she knows.
Three Mile Island was a nuclear reactor disaster that happened in the United States, in Pennsylvania, I believe. And it was not nearly to the extent of Chernobyl, you know, but it was a nearly, from my hazy memory, like a nearly catastrophic thing. It was a problem. It was not Chernobyl level, but it was like everyone knew about it. And it was, I think, just a handful of years before Chernobyl. And so it would have been especially for the Soviet Union to have admitted, you know, we also had a nuclear reactor issue was not, they would have avoided anything to do it, obviously.
Right.
And it was a partial meltdown. Paul's basically exactly PMD. Right.
Partial meltdown.
That's right. And on the 7-point international nuclear event scale, it rated as a 5. So,
okay.
Pretty high.
Chernobyl's a seven. Which is the worst.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Chernobyl was that and Fukushima.
Jeez, oh, yeah. Pete. Only a 7.
Oh, I think that's the worst. I think it's a scale of 1 to 7.
Oh, is it 1 to 7? Yeah.
It's all relative when you think about it.
Well, then, you did it, Chernobyl.
All right, so just to catch up on the... So we got up on the board Viktor Brukhonov?
Yes.
And also...
Communism.
Communism? Or do we want to sort of...
The Soviet Union.
I think the Soviet Union. So we have Viktor Brukhonov, who is the director... And Anatoly Dyatlov, who was like the man on the ground in charge.
Yes.
And then we have the underling, Leonid.
Poor Leonid.
And then who else you got? We talk about Boris Shcherbina. So Mr. Shcherbina.
Stellan Skarsgård?
Yes. So Shcherbina is described, according to History.com, as a grizzled apparatchik, which is a bureaucrat. I did not know this word, apparatchik. At the head of the USSR's fuel and energy industries.
Hello. A grizzled apparatchik?
That's your type.
That's my type.
Every time a man says she has a crush, I'm like, let me guess, he's a grizzled apparatchik?
Classic. So Shcherbina is responsible not only for bringing the catastrophe under control, but investigating its consequence. So not only did he disregard the need for personal radiation protection, but he dismissed calls for immediate evacuation of the city of Pripyat. And as the wayward opinions of panic-mongering weaklings, it was not until almost 36 hours after the toxic, you know, the explosion began pouring from the wreckage of the reactor that the city's residents were finally allowed to leave. So I did read this where they decided to cut off the phone lines so that people couldn't call each other and talk to each other. So word wouldn't spread.
That's horrible.
Which is so screwed up. And I think that Boris, you know, he's the one also putting pressure on the Chernobyl people to get more reactors up. They were going to build a fifth reactor after this fourth one was kind of done like quickly and on the fly. Mm. So I think that we need to put Mr. Boris up.
Now, Boris was also portrayed very sympathetically in the HBO miniseries. So they kind of made him, he starts out as a grizzled bureaucrat and he kind of becomes, you know, he starts to understand the science. And in the movie, he's got a character arc where he, in the TV show, he kind of becomes a good guy by the end. But it sounds like that wasn't really historically accurate.
I guess it's Hollywood. That's Hollywood putting its touch. We all want someone, a bad guy, to turn good, right?
I do.
He, to me, represents the Soviet Union, too. Mm.
Yeah.
In that way. You know, and other things I'd love to talk about, are Moscow's hubris. So by the end of the century, Moscow intended Chernobyl to be part of a dense network of atomic power mega complexes, each one home to up to a dozen reactors. But the labor and supply problems remained endemic, and the concrete was defective. Okay, this is problematic. And the men lacked power tools. I mean, a team of KGB agents and their network of informants at the plant reported a continuing series of alarming building faults.
The concrete being defective is such a strange idea, because concrete seems like such a simple thing. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know entirely what it's composed of.
It was a bit soft. The concrete was a bit mushy.
They can't even get the concrete right.
It wasn't as hard.
Right.
Well, you guys talk a little bit about Moscow's hubris. Like, what does that mean to you? And
is the idea that it was like kind of a rush job, that they were cutting corners because they had just an arbitrary date that they wanted to meet?
Yes.
And be able to show this thing off. It's exactly. So insane. It's madness. Like,
I mean, they kept putting off the safety tests for 2 years.
Like, people knew what nuclear power was. It's so crazy mm-hmm. that they'd be like, let's cut some corners. We're going to make sure we want to have our grand opening.
I mean, it's the 80s. It's not like they didn't know.
Yeah.
These are very well-educated people.
Yeah.
So that to me is just like this idea, you know, the wanting to get ahead, the wanting to show off. And it's just really putting themselves over, like, the people.
Yeah.
Which is so hypocritical,
mm-hmm.
Especially of them. Now we're going to talk to our guest expert, Dr. Robert Peter Gale. It was fascinating to hear his side of who he thought was to blame and to really walk us through some of the steps that led to this terrible disaster.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, Dr. Gale.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being a guest expert on our show. First of all, I wanted to talk about your background, because from what I understand, you were actually there at Moscow's hospital number 6 treating victims of this disaster. Is that correct?
Yes, I was there for a couple of days after the accident, for a couple of years. Let me just say that I'm a physician and a scientist, molecular biologist, and I'm also the person who deals with most of the radiation and nuclear accidents, large-scale ones that occur in the world. So I get called to these events. You know, shortly, a couple of days, day or two or three after the it became clear there was an accident at Chernobyl, President Gorbachev asked me to come to Moscow. And firstly to deal, I had known him previously, but firstly to deal with the victims of the accident, the acute victims. And that, you know, that took several months where I worked with a Soviet team of Soviet physicians, and I brought over a few of my colleagues from the United States and from Israel to help. But later to deal with, you know, some longer-term consequences. So I was initially in Moscow, as you correctly said, but eventually I wound up all over the affected republics, or what were the republics, including, you know, Belarus and Russia and Ukraine. And this has gone on over, you know, many years now. It's now more than 30 years after the accident.
Based on your, you know, experience and what you know about the disaster, if you were to get down to who you thought was to blame, from your perspective, what would you say?
We have to go back quite a ways.
Sure.
We actually have to go back to the Cold War and an arms race between the United States and the Soviet Union. In the effort to build nuclear weapons, you need uranium or plutonium. And so the Soviet approach, or one of the Soviet approaches, was to develop a kind of reactor called an RBMK reactor that is rather different, extremely different than the Western reactors that we have, in the sense that it's gigantic in comparison, and maybe 20 times or 30 times larger. And the reason for this RBMK reactor is that not only does it make electricity, which is the good news, but it also produces plutonium that can be used for weapons. So, you know, if we sort of start with the root cause is the Cold War. Or maybe you could say it's the conflict between capitalism and communism. But these RBMK reactors were known to have a fundamental design flaw, something that's called a positive void coefficient. But without getting lost in that, if we move past the Cold War, we can sort of say that the design of the RBMK type reactor is the next root cause. And sort of we move down the line, we could sort of come to the concept of nuclear terrorism.
Wow.
Now, and the reason for saying that is that, you know, a nuclear reactor needs to be cooled. And there are a number of redundant systems that allow the reactor to be cooled. But at the end of the day, they hinge upon circulating water through the reactor core. And and this has also come up in the Fukushima accident. You know, we have all kinds of things. We have electricity that's produced at the plant that drives the pumps. We have electricity that comes into the plant from other, you know, places on the electrical grid. And then we have diesel fuel pumps. If all the electricity fails, these diesel fuel pumps kick in, or should kick in. Of course, they were inundated by water by the tsunami in Fukushima. So trying to tie this all together, what the engineers were trying to do in the Chernobyl accident was to test the safety of that system. So by powering down the reactor, they wanted to see how long could the turbines that are spinning, how long would they continue to produce electricity? Because what if some terrorists cut off the external electrical supply to the reactors? So ironically, this was a safety test.
Right.
So we could say that the third root cause, in my opinion, was the threat of nuclear terrorism. Sort of at the end of this food chain, we come to decisions by the operators. And this is a common problem. You have a bunch of readouts, and human beings figure that they're smarter than the readouts from the reactor or from an airplane or something of the sort. And so they override safety, built-in safety issues, making human decisions that sometimes, you know, are great, but more often than not are wrong.
Right.
So that's the chain of events. Cold War, nuclear weapons, reactor design, nuclear terrorism, and then human frailty.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I think these are four major factors.
If people want to understand more about these technical things, but written in a way the public could understand easily, Eric Lax and I have written a book for Knopf called Radiation, What You Need to Know, that deals with not only with this accident, but it deals with radiation, which is an area where most people don't really have a solid grasp of what it is and what it does, and the trade-off between global warming and nuclear energy and things like that.
Well, thank you so much for your work, and thank you so much for talking to us today.
Sure, my pleasure. Take care.
Ooh, the alarm.
That means we are out of time for putting people on the board, but I want to quickly just throw it over to Paul and ask if there's any additional people or ideas that you think should be put on the board before we get into the deliberation phase.
You know what? I don't mean to blow your mind, but the United States of America.
Whoa! Oh, we're overheating in number three reactor is overheating. The graphite is popping off of the lid.
Paul, why?
For our part of the Cold War that kept this lunacy going, we had Ronald Reagan in the White House. Oh, no, he's out by this point. He was...
Who's on 86? No,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was 8 at 88. You know, he is keeping the Cold War going with a lot of tough talk from the White House. And I think it fueled this sort of it kept this sort of thing going, this making Russia feel like they had to prove stuff. Obviously, Russia is its own country and they're free to do what they want. But I don't know. I think that the stupidity of the Cold War certainly fueled this sort of nonsense, and then plenty of nonsense that happened in our country too. You know.
Well, I have some good news for you, because according to the internet, Russia is planning its own Chernobyl series where America is to blame.
Yes.
Wow! According to The Guardian, at the center of the plot of the Russian Chernobyl is a American CIA plot.
Whoa.
So this seems a little conspiratorial to me.
Yes.
You know.
But we were doing shit like that.
That's
that was
true.
For real.
What's the CIA plot? Does it tell us?
It doesn't say it, but I'm sniffing out a little sabotage.
Wow.
who wrote it?
Exciting.
Anyone sexy?
The Russian series creator Alexei Muradov apparently considers it a source of national shame that the American series is earning so much praise.
So this is like a reaction.
Yeah,
this is a reaction.
Nuclear reaction.
Okay, so Chris, why don't you read to us what we have up on the board?
Okay, for the Chernobyl disaster, the alarmist board of blame, I just came up with that, is, okay, I just have last names here. Dyatlov, who would be the sort of general manager.
He's the man on the ground.
Of this jack-in-the-box, man on the ground. Toptonov, who's sort of like the guy in the trenches, is actually pushing the buttons.
Yeah.
25-year-old.
Yeah.
Been there for 2 months. You have Viktor Brukhonov.
He's the head of the facility.
The head of the facility.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chernobyl facility.
Right. Overseer of the facility. Okay. We got the Soviet Union.
Great.
Lies, secrecy. And just And Boris Sherbina. Sherbina?
Sherbs.
Yeah.
The Sherbsy, who came in late. He wasn't at, you know, what's it called? The ground zero, but he came in and he made some bad decisions, possibly. And we have Moscow's hubris, and we have the United States of America. I feel like you might be able to combine the Soviet Union with Moscow's hubris.
Sure.
I think we can do that. I think that's a good first step.
Okay.
Because I'm having a hard time thinking of what we're going to cross off the list first.
I'm not.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
You want to let the kid off?
I got to let him off. He probably shouldn't have been in that position. Mm-hmm. You know, he it's there's so much that's weighing down on him, and I don't think he had the experience and the wisdom and the maturity to handle it. And I think that probably he is I don't even know if he's still alive. Did he?
Oh, he died. He died.
He must have died pretty soon,
shortly
right?
Shortly after. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that he should be taken off.
Okay.
We got to take people off.
I know, we have to. And I do agree with you. I mean, he literally did it. He literally did it. But I think his supervisor should have been on top of that. And not just that,
absolutely.
But there were other people that were crowded around there watching this safety test happen.
Yes.
So there were people from the shift before who decided to like stick around.
Yeah.
Someone should have been alarmed and said, whoa, 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 let me jump in. I got this.
Now, just to follow up on what happened to this guy, he died with a month later of acute radiation poisoning. Mm-hmm. And in 2008, he was posthumously awarded with this is kind of in poor taste, the third degree order for courage. I'm so sorry. By the president of Ukraine.
Wow.
Oh.
So, but we don't know what to make of that order for courage, right? I mean, but that's not what's going to... We're not going to listen to the president of Ukraine here, guys. We need to make our own decisions
right.
here.
Yeah.
We are
true.
An
president.
Independent body.
Yeah.
I know that
determining who's wrong.
This podcast has been informed a lot by the president of the Ukraine.
We
in the
check
past,
in. We definitely check in with him.
But I think in this one, I think it's definitely a conflict of interest.
Okay. Okay. I think you're right. So let's take poor what's his name? Leonid?
Leonid Toptanov.
Lenny.
All right. Lenny's out. So can I just look at the board?
Oh, yeah.
Quick?
Sure. Sorry.
So still on the board is Dyatlov, Brukhanov, Sherbina, and the U.S. and the Soviet Union slash the hubris of Moscow. Now, do you say Moscow or do you say Moscow?
I don't know because okay. I think I say both.
Dare I say we can take the U.S. of A?
Yeah. I mean, we're getting into eliminations,
yeah.
But I think it was important that we mentioned it.
That's right.
And I think it's okay that we can, it's been noted.
At the end of the day, this is an election year, and we need a country that's united, and we couldn't possibly
we can't put them in
be
jail.
Any more divided than
Let's
we already are.
Let's not tear each other
Let's
apart.
Not tear each other apart.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's why I'm voting
not
for Joe
for
Biden.
This, not for Chernobyl.
Oh, God.
That's a joke.
Wait, what did you say?
That's why I'm voting for Joe Biden.
Oh, no.
No, I was kidding.
Okay, off the list, phew, U.S. of A. So we still have four major parties up on the board. I'm really having a hard time thinking about what we're going to do, what we're going to take off next. I mean, Sherbina to me.
That's where I was going to go next to take him off because he came in so late in the game.
Yeah.
He's doing the best he can to control the situation after the fact. And I don't know that you can... lay all this on his feet at his feet.
Yeah. I'm with you. So
as far as like the sort of cover up aspect of it goes, sure.
Right.
But in terms of the disaster itself, yes.
Right.
Right.
He caused more harm in the end, but he didn't really, we can't blame him for the actual disaster.
No.
But just because we're taking him off the list doesn't mean that we think he didn't come around to like the nerd in the end. Wait, hang on. Let me try and say that again.
Wait, what?
Just because we're not blaming him doesn't mean
he's blameless.
He's blameless.
Oh, phew.
That's poetry.
Oh, are you nominating him for the big slap?
No. No, but maybe I should. Maybe he should be nominated
you
for the big
slap. You know what? I second. I think he should be nominated for the big
slap.
All right,
let's give him a big slap, Amanda.
Oh, take that.
But you're off the list. You survived that one, Sherbina. If I had three fingers, I'd point them at all three parties.
For the listener,
she only has two fingers.
No, I only have one. If I have three fingers, fingers? I'd point three
blame
them.
Fingers. You can only use your index finger for blame.
That's right.
We all know this.
And you should see her give a big slap with those one finger.
It's soft. It's
she can't
soft.
Do it.
Yeah.
What was that other thing we talked about? The soft award or what was
Oh, the softy award.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
The softy award.
Oh, the little guy has to get the softy award.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll give it to him at the end.
He was the softest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Guys, what are we going to do here? I don't think we can cross off Dyatlov, not just yet.
Oh, no.
Brukhanov, I mean, he's the guy who's like telling everyone, go faster, faster. Let's get it done.
Plus, at the end of the day, it's his reactor, right? I mean, it's under his name. Like, everything that happens.
But he's also following orders from the government.
Right. But if he's created a culture at the reactor, the reactor that he is overseeing, that would allow this kind of crazy corner cutting, I mean, that's a big part of the blame.
I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, everyone always, like, poo-poos on Dyatlov because he was literally there. But as they say, shit trickles down, you know? And
well, they say it rolls downhill.
Oh, does it?
If you want to avoid shit altogether, you could say that the fish stinks from the head on down.
Oh, I love that.
I love that one too.
I think Paul's point about the culture is huge. Yeah. I mean, they push this test date back again and again and again. It just throws the whole thing off track. Hey, either do something right the right way or don't do it at all here.
But I will say this, and I agree with that. And usually I'm always like, okay, well, we can choose for ourselves. Like Brukhanov maybe could have been like chosen to say, no, this, and we need more time to build this properly, right? Mm. But again, we have to remember that this is Russia. This is communism. And if you do that, it's like your livelihood, your everything you've worked so hard for is quickly taken away from you. And it's not like America where you can just build yourself back up, you know? Yeah. It's the stakes are really high. And that was a big factor for our friend Leonid. He knew he didn't know how to actually manage this this reactor. But he didn't. He knew that if he said that he wasn't going to do it, then he would get fired. And he this like comfortable life that he had built in this new city was going to be taken away from him.
A case for the Soviet hubris.
We're getting to the end here, so I think you guys, out of the three that are left over, need to pick who's to blame.
I know. I have mine.
Oh my God, you have your heart set on something.
I do.
I have mine too.
Say it at the same time.
3, 2, 1. The Soviet Union.
Wow.
I can't believe we agreed. I thought you were going to go with Mr. Brukhanov.
No, I like it all. To me, it's that culture that caused this to happen the way that it happened. Because I think without that on top of everything, there's more room for argument. There's more room for, hold on a second, let's not do this the way we're doing it. Let's take some time. You know what I mean? I think without that hanging over everything and the fish stinks from the head on down, I think that there would have been more chances and more opportunities for this to be averted.
I can't agree with you more. Soviet Union, you're going to the alarmist jail.
Finally.
Yeah, really.
The Cold War's over. We did it.
We did it. The world is a safer place because of us.
I like to think so.
After the nuclear disaster, according to the World Health Organization, Chernobyl-affected populations had anxiety levels that were twice as high than non-exposed population. The United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation says, although those exposed as children and the emergency and recovery workers are at increased risk of radiation-induced effects, the vast majority of the population need not live in fear of serious health consequences due to the radiation from the Chernobyl accident. LiveScience says that after the Chernobyl disaster, reactor safety increased in East Europe as well as around the world. The remaining RBMK reactors were modified to reduce the risk in another disaster. And many international programs, including the International Atomic Energy Agency and the World Association of Nuclear Operators, were founded as a direct result of Chernobyl. The items that people left behind as they evacuated Pripyat still remain at the site. Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at The Alarmist The on Twitter, at The Alarmist Podcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about Megxit, the royal exit of Meghan and Harry.
Powered by Acast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.